As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I am Ben Standing and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic, which means I am getting ready for Saturday's preseason game at Kansas City. I won't be going, but I will be watching, and I will be excited to hear the takeaways from that game with our guest today, our friend Matt Parrish with the Washington Times, who's going to help me. I wouldn't call this a preview for the game because, you know, I don't really care about the game, but things to consider, things to watch, and state of the team as they're done with this week of training camp. Matthew, How are you since I saw you last?
I'm all right. Still in Ashburn. I'm doing this podcast from Barnes & Noble, so apologies to the people around me. I probably should have gone outside.
Right. I like to apologize to the people who aren't who won't be hearing you, essentially. Won't be hearing this, but they'll just be like, "Why is this guy? Who's this guy talking to?" But we'll hope for the best. Yeah. So we're done. Another week of training camp. The fans are, today was the last day on Thursday, last day for fans. We're still back out there next week after the game for a few days, and then it gets into sort of regular season mode, which is a reminder that we're getting a little bit closer to the end here and, you know, to the start of the season. And there's a lot to get into. I would get into the Manti Te'o documentary, but Matt hasn't seen it yet. I just recommend anybody who's interested, even if you're not interested, I'm telling you, go watch this thing. Absolutely a bonkers story. We can talk about it. I'll maybe next week we'll go into some detail. There was also big news today in the league, Matt, about the Deshaun Watson situation. They upped the suspension to 11 games and a $5 million fine. I have not been online too much. I imagine a lot of people are not happy still, but 11 games is basically double what he had, so it's something.
It's something, but when you consider that the 12th game is against Houston, at Houston, to play against his former team, that doesn't leave a great taste in your mouth. If you're going to double the suspension but not double it fully, and you see the reason maybe why, it's just kind of gross.
Well, I heard somebody make the point that, you know, in order for your contract to toll, so for it to count and move to the next year, you have to play at least six games, or at least be on a roster for six games, whatever. And this would thus allow him to do that. Obviously, the timing, though, is pretty nuts that this is the game, that the opponent that he would face in Houston, of course. But, you know, I don't know.
Just one last thing on that is, you know, there's an argument to be made that the punishment should be that the contract tolls, you know. That the contract does toll is kind of a reward because he's supposed to make over $40 million next year.
Right. The $5 million fine is nothing. His salary this year is only $1 million. So even though he's missing however many games, you know, really the fine is $6 million for a guy who the following year has over $40 million guaranteed and has that not over 40 for the next several years. So he'll be fine financially, but he still won't be playing for the first 11 games this year. Wait, I didn't even look at the schedule. Does this mean we're the Washington? Oh no, what am I talking about? Yeah, no. So they will play Washington though. If he's available, he'll be, the suspension will be over because that's what the next to last game of the year. So doesn't, we'll see him presumably, but long way to go before that happens. What we will see though, before we get to the game, you know, as always, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ben Standing. Matt is at Matthew_Paris, P-A-R-A-S, and go read him on the Washington Times. Go check out The Athletic. Of course, I had a couple other podcasts up this week. You can go check those out as well. All right, let's get to some things. We're not going to overcomplicate this. I came up with a few topics for us to discuss for this game based on some things that are happening this week, things we want to see, whatnot. I guess let's start with the obvious one. Carson Wentz, you might have heard of him. Basic question is, what do we need to see out of him as if we're the ones in charge of the world? What would you like to see out of Carson Wentz, who, you know, was effective in the last game, 10 of 13, but only for 74 yards, didn't connect on much deep, but, you know, also avoided turnovers. He led the third possession was a touchdown, a lot of Brian Robinson on that drive, but whatever. What do you think? What's like the one thing or two things that you want to see out of Wentz this week?
Well, I think the first one is obvious, is for him just to stay healthy. You know, Washington's offensive line is at the point where, you know, they're probably going to have three backups in at least, you know, both guard spots. And then center Chase Roullier is going to be on a pitch count. So beyond that obvious one, you know, I would like to see some intermediate stuff. I'd like to see him spread the ball a little bit around a little more. It really seems like he was hitting the Armani Rodgers connection really heavy for five of those targets. So, you know, I'd like to see him go to Terry a little more, Curtis Samuel, and Jahan Dotson too. He only had one target, which was kind of wiped out by a holding penalty against Carolina. So that said, you know, it's a, as people are making drinks in the background here, if it's loud, but that said, it's the preseason. So, you know, we might probably won't see any of those things.
Yeah, so Rivera said today, ideally, the starters would play the first half. He also said that they'll have to make that decision if that's feasible, because primarily on offense, because of the offensive line situation. At Thursday's practice, so Charles Leno was out with an excused absence, apparently, which meant they put Cornelius Lucas at left tackle. They had Sadiq Charles at left guard, Chase Roy at center, Aaron Montero at right guard. If you've not heard of Aaron Montero, don't worry. Neither of half the people on the beat. He's a guy that's there for camp practices. He's not a real roster hopeful, as far as any of us would think. And then Sam Cosmi. And like you said, Roullier is not going to play the whole time. So Keith Ishmael would probably come in. That's a potentially dicey situation. And, you know, it's unfortunate. Now, it sounds like Rivera may play the starters in the last game, but he didn't last year. So we'll see what happens this week. But yeah, keeping Wentz upright is important for the health aspect. But also, I know Rivera said after the last game that, like, one thing he wished the offense had done would have been hit on a long pass down the field. Wentz was mostly underneath. I've been saying it was sort of an Alex Smithian like performance. But you bring Carson Wentz in to get the ball down the field. You know, he's been sporadic with that in practice, but he has hit Jahan Dotson. They had a long connection in Wednesday's practice, and he's hit some other guys as well. So that would be big, but you got to have time to do that. I think that's the biggest thing. Either way, almost regardless of what happens, I'm not going to hopefully panic, and neither should you, or I'm not going to go the other way and say, wow, they've solved all their problems. But at the same time, seeing a good hit down the field would be big. Just let me ask you this, so we can then switch to somebody else. Think about where you were going into camp with Wentz, and then tell me where you are now. Do you feel as confident or at the same level you were at before, more, less, about the same?
I'm probably where I was at the beginning of camp. A few first days into camp, I thought it was going to be a lot worse than I was expecting. The accuracy was kind of really all over the place. He wasn't really consistent, but it seems like he's kind of turned a corner here lately, to where I think, you know, I was talking to Santana Moss, just kind of on the sideline, and we were kind of chatting about how Wentz is a guy that when he's hot, he's hot. When he's cold, he's really cold. So, that's kind of been the story of his career. And so I think, you know, we'll see those consistent and inconsistent streaks during the season.
Yeah, and I will say that while last week's performance was, you know, not the full Wentz package, that he was willing to take the balls underneath, I think is potentially, you could argue, a sign of progress, because part of the issue that he's had in his career, particularly last year with the Colts, was this notion of playing hero ball, not taking those layups to running backs and tight ends or whatever underneath. Now, it works in tandem with getting the ball down the field, but, you know, there's something to be said for that as well. So we won't ignore that, but nonetheless, that's kind of where we're at with Wentz. Let's go to the offensive line, or actually, I already forgot what I told you we'll do next, but let's go to the offensive line. Did I put that on our agenda? Hold on. Yeah, I did. Okay. So here's a question. Bigger injury concern right now, the offensive line or the tight end? Now, just to lay it out, here's the deal. We just mentioned the offensive line. So basically, their top three guards are all out, and we'll see about that. And I'm not just talking about this game, but in general. Then you have the tight end room. I mean, Lordy, at the start of training camp, you had Antonio Gandy-Golden. He retired. You had Samus Reyes. He was just put on IR this week. You had John Bates, who basically hasn't played much at all in camp. And you had Cole Turner, who's now been out roughly 2 weeks with a hamstring injury, on top of Logan Thomas already being out. That leaves you with, Curtis Hodges, who was, you know, he's been a fun player throughout this offseason and in the camp. He's not practiced the last 2 days. That has left them with Armani Rogers, an undrafted free agent who played quarterback last year in college, and Eli Wolf, who joined the team during camp. That's their tight end room. So, but whether for this game or the long haul, which situation is more alarming or concerning for you, the offensive line injuries or the tight end injuries?
I think the offensive line injuries, because of that long haul aspect. You know, we talked to Cole Turner the other day, and said he'd probably be back in a week or two. He's coming along. We've seen, you know, Turner and Bates just do stuff on the sideline, kind of doing slow footwork here and there. You know, it seems like they're kind of ramping up. The offensive line, it's been a lot more quiet. You know, we've seen Andrew Norwell, who's missed this week of practice, just on the bike, not doing much. We haven't even really seen Trey Turner, who's been out pretty much all of camp, dealing with a quad injury. And then Wes Weitzer, it sounded pretty ominous the other day with Rivera saying he was a little bit concerned. We probably should have followed up today and asking if he was any more optimistic after they got the results back or after he was further evaluated. But it seems like if we're talking about which of these injuries can maybe affect Washington going into the season, I think the offensive line is probably a little bit more to worry about.
Yeah, let's stay with that for a second, because, you know, we only know what Rivera tells us with regards to the injuries, and whether we're talking about these guards or the tight end, we're not quite sure, but nothing sounds particularly problematic long term. So let's just assume to a certain extent that everybody shows back up here at some point. Maybe it's not till week one, but at some point here. I don't know. We don't, you know, everybody's just assuming that the offensive line will be good because John Matsko is a good offensive line coach. But, you know, injuries, Norwell and Schweitzer and Trey Turner all have injury histories. I think Turner played all 17 games last year, but he's not done that typically in his career. He's also not been the Pro Bowl level player that he had been earlier in his career the last couple of years, which is why he's kind of bounced around a little bit. Schweitzer, who's been solid whenever he's replaced Brandon Scherff, has also missed a bunch of games. Is there a world? So the other day, they played Sam Cosmi at right guard and Cornelius Lucas at right tackle with Leno at left tackle. Is there a world in which it actually makes sense to do that for real? Because Lucas has been pretty solid when he's played. And there are people who think that Cosmi would be better off long-term at guard than tackle. Obviously, guard's more not as valuable as tackle. So you do have to factor in sort of the bigger picture aspect, but in terms of this year, they're putting so much investment into getting Carson Wentz as to succeed as much as possible. And now that we've already gone through all of camp and these guys are, well, Turner in particular, Trey Turner has not been playing. I don't know. I'm just, now that it's here, now that we've gotten to the point where they actually did it one day, I'm mentally open to that scenario.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought, but I think the only reason I would push back against that is, as a rookie, Sam Cosmi showed a lot at tackle. He was probably the best player on their rookie class when he was healthy. And so, you know, I'd like to see him develop at that spot a little bit more. You know, he he's more of a natural right tackle. I know he played it at I know he played on the left side at Texas, but he also played the right side, and he was a right tackle in high school as well. So, you know, I do think that spot is right for him. They do have size at the guard spots for backups. If, let's say, Sadiq Charles has to play. But, you know, it's gotten to the point where I was kind of wondering what Eric Flowers was doing, if maybe Washington would reach back out to him. I think I would rather go that route, trying to bring, say, Flowers back than just immediately kick Cosme to guard. But, yeah, if these guys were hurt really long-term, or if they were missing a first half of the season, then I'd say, sure, throw Cosme in there and have Lucas there. But I think just as a patchwork solution, I'd still rather get by with Chris Paul at guard for a week and Sidney Charles for a guard for a week than just move Cosme there.
What was interesting today and kind of throughout camp is, even with all these injuries, they still didn't move Chris Paul to the ones. Right. Now, I think he's played pretty decently in camp, so I'm not suggesting he's been poor, but today would have been a perfect opportunity to do what you just said, and they didn't do that, which either leads me to think they don't want to rush him, or, you know, Taylor Heinicke also needs to get protected, which is reasonable. But, you know, and which, by the way, that's another variable here. The more guys you have to push into the front line means more random backup, more random linemen for Taylor Heinicke and Sam Howell. But in any event, I guess, I mean, look, I don't pretend that I'm one of these offensive line gurus. So if we rank their offensive linemen, I don't know definitively that Cornelius Lucas is top five over Trey Turner or Wes Schweitzer. I'm just putting it out there. That's all I'm saying. And I wonder if for this game, they think they actually need to do that to help give Carson Wentz the best chance they can. And if they do that, does that put a thought in their head? We'll see about that. As far as tight end goes, I mean, I'm curious to see what Armani Rogers does here. You know, he's looked pretty, if I say good, like, I don't want to make it sound like he's shown to be an NFL starter, but he's shown potential throughout practice over the last 10 days or so, and in that game. So, you know, I have him as my fourth tight end if they keep four, which they may not, but if they do, that's what I have. And you know, it's unbelievable right now, he's the starter. So, you know, imagine if I told you that a month ago, Armani Rogers is a starting tight end in the second preseason game. You'd be like,
right. Whoa. It's weird because Cole Turner played against Rogers in college. You know, Turner went to Nevada and Rogers played at UNLV. So he's used to seeing Rogers kind of sling it. And that hasn't, you know, now they're running routes kind of side by side together. So,
yeah,
it's been it's quite the twist.
Yeah, bonkers. Speaking of twists, we had a big one this week with Antonio Gibson.
Great segue. Ultimate professional.
Thank you. You know, obviously, he has – this week he was playing on special teams. He did some punt protection work one day, and then the next day was with the returners. And today, you know, Ron Rivera's like, oh, you know, everybody's got to be available for special teams, and – you know, you guys just don't see it because during, you know, once they close practices, we only get the first 10 or 15 minutes. We don't know what they do, and that's fair. But I've been here the last two training camps, and I don't remember Antonio Gibson, certainly not last year, being involved in special teams. And I would say in this training camp, prior to the fumble, he was not on special teams. So, you know, they can say whatever they want, but this is clearly a move to say, we're open to a possibility that Brian Robinson ends up being our main back on early downs. And that third running back, whether it was a Jared Patterson or one of these guys, is going to have to do some special teams work. Now, Gibson's not going anywhere. He's safe on the roster. Let's just not go there. But there is a possibility that he ends up doing these things. Now, I'd be stunned if he plays special teams in this game, just for the injury aspect alone. But that said, what on a scale of, you know, 1 to 10, where are you at on the Antonio Gibson actually plays special teams this year?
Like a 7 or an 8.
Wow. Okay.
I do think it's, you know, I think it's a lot higher than it was. I mean, maybe they don't do it consistently. I think there's a possibility that maybe he plays special teams and is still the first or second down back. I think the special teams aspect, too, of it would be, if I had to, he'd be much more of a returner to me. If they're going to throw him out there in that, I think he's more likely to play returner than necessarily be that slot blocker. That's really jarring to see on the punt team. So yeah, I mean that's kind of where I don't know. Like I would still pick Gibson ahead of Brian Robinson right now to start week one, but he's in the doghouse. Like he appeared to be, but now he definitely is. Fumbles are an issue, and just Rivera's comments. I know he tried to downplay him playing special teams, but you know, he threw Rivera softball to say, "Hey, how'd you think Antonio responded to this week?" And he gave a very lukewarm answer. It was just like, you know, it's his job to go out there, basically. It wasn't a, "Oh, Antonio is really taking this to heart and has learned," so on and so forth. It was very lukewarm praise, and he's got to show them something going into the next couple weeks here.
We should ask the person making the drinks what they think.
Oh.
I think I'm kind of with you on all that. I mean, look, we've been talking about, you know, go months ago, the idea of this team looking to get another running back, in part because as dynamic as Gibson can be at times, he's just not very consistent, or at least he hasn't been to date. And, you know, it's hard to be, not that they want to necessarily be a ball control offense, but that's what worked for them best last year. And it was hard to replicate that when you have a guy who not only is he been injured, but I mean, he played through a lot of injuries, but it was limited clearly when he had some of the injuries. But then you have the fumbles, and let's not forget, multiple times last year they benched him for a series or two after fumble. So it's not like this is completely out of the blue. That said, I would still peg him to be the lead back, but I think Brian Robinson, you know, more, he's more decisive, more consistent. He's had a history of not fumbling the ball at Alabama. So I think I'm with you, like the 70% or so range, because at some point it just feels like Gibson, where we are now, will have that moment. Now, if he goes 8 games and then he fumbles, I mean, that may be a different deal, but you know, it wouldn't surprise me. And if you do the sort of the math on a roster, like I said, there's only so many guys who are going to play special teams, right? So the third running back, like Garrett, if last year with Jared Patterson, he's playing special teams. So you kind of pencil that guy in to do it. And that's where this is a thing. But to your point, we don't know who the returners will be, and it's possible that Gibson or Robinson ends up being that guy, at least in some nominal way. It's just, you know, a week ago, I don't think any of us were thinking Antonio Gibson, and here we are. What a wacky world.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Just quick while we're here on the running backs, give me the quick take here. A, do you think they keep a fourth running back? And B, if they do, is it Jared Patterson or Jonathan Williams?
I think it's Jonathan Williams. You know, Jared Patterson has kind of had a nice camp lately. He shows that speed. But speaking of special teams, you notice more of Williams out there in that slot blocker role that I mentioned earlier. When Gibson isn't in there, it's Jonathan Williams. It seems like in the rotation, so to speak, Williams almost always goes before Patterson. And so, I would lean Jonathan Williams. And he played a lot more. If you go back to his numbers after J.D. McKissic got hurt, he played the last 5 games. He had 17 carries. He was part of this team in a little bit bigger of a role than I kind of noticed at the end of last season. So I think they like him, and he's had a really good camp.
Yeah, I like him a lot too. If they had never drafted Brian Robinson, I'd be like, oh, okay. Like, there's a guy that runs hard, who will do some of those, you know, interior running things that they're looking for. But yeah, I just, you know, again, we'll have to see what the injuries look like at tight end and offensive line or anything else. It's hard to keep 4 running backs if you're keeping 3 quarterbacks, 10 defensive linemen, 10 or 11 defensive backs, etc. So we'll see. But I'm with you. I think Jonathan Williams would be my answer as it stands right now. Speaking of a guy like a Jonathan Williams, give everybody a name of a sleeper or some, you know, deep cut roster guy that you're keeping an eye on for this game, or you would tell people, you know what, I think this guy's got, he's got a shot that maybe we just don't talk about enough?
Oh, Jonathan Williams was going to be my answer for this.
Well, that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah, Jonathan Allen. Yeah, Jonathan Allen, you know, they're starting defensive tackle.
He's got a shot.
Yeah, I know. Jonathan Williams would be in the receivers. Dax Milne, I think, has had also a nice camp, and he did some stuff in last Saturday's game. Maybe he can build on that. Besides that, defensively, I'm trying to think. Daniel Wise had a really nice opener against Carolina, but, you know, William Bradley King has really flashed all of camp, so let's go with William Bradley King. He didn't really make the roster last year, but maybe he's a guy that steals one of those end spots.
Yeah, I've got him on the 53 I just put out, so I like that one. Somebody I didn't have on my 53, and I'm just saying I'm going to keep an eye on him at least, is Stephen Parker, one of the safety picked up during camp. I mean, you know, he just looks fluid out there. Seems like he's been around the ball a bunch. He's got experience too. I mean, not like a ton, but he's played in the league for a few years. And when you consider that the backup safeties are currently Percy Butler and Derek Forrest, two guys who basically, you know, Forrest only played on special teams a little bit last year, and Butler's a rookie, you know, having a little experience would help. Now, I grant you, Jeremy Reeves has played as well, but obviously, as we know, Jeremy Reeves is always the 54th guy, it seems like. So, you know, I'll just be curious to see what happens there with Parker. That's just a name to keep in mind. I also just say for fun with the return game, they seem to be giving Kyrick McGowan a lot of work at receiver and returner. Now, it seems like he's behind Dax Milne and Alex Erickson. But today, Nate Kanter was like, hey, you know, look, anybody who's back there is in the mix. So, you know, if somebody has a good return, then, you know, that could be, you know, kind of the thing. So we'll see how that goes. Last one for me here. All the coordinators talk this week. Scott Turner Tuesday, then Jack Del Rio, then Nate Kanter. I did talk a little bit earlier in the week about Scott Turner going down from the booth to the field to call games, but whether it's that or something else, was there anything that any of the coordinators said for you that was interesting?
Yeah, I would stick with the booth, from the booth to the sideline. I think it kind of shows how they're trying to accommodate Wentz. You know, Wentz didn't specifically ask for that, but if you look at his history in Philadelphia and Indianapolis, obviously he had coaches who were the primary play caller, and they stood on the sideline. And so, you know, trying to ease that transition, trying to smooth it along, I think by doing that, by having, you know, Wentz likes his control. The guys in Philadelphia really said that his personality was a type A person. So if he can go to Scott Turner on the sideline and give direct feedback, we've seen that in practice. I think it's another tool, another resource for him to do so. And so I think that'll ultimately make a difference, as much as I'm disappointed that maybe Jack Del Rio didn't say anything of note.
Right. Del Rio was pretty close to the vest. Although, since we haven't mentioned a lot about defense, I think obviously a guy we're all going to pay attention to in this game is Jamin Davis. And, you know, Del Rio is the latest person to say, look, I don't think Del Rio is somebody who's going to blow sunshine up, you know, what, if he doesn't feel it. But he said some pretty good things about Jamin Davis, his confidence being there, and, you know, watching him play. And when I've said this before, when he's come in and spoken with us, I think you can see the confidence as well. So that's obviously going to be a huge one to watch in general, for sure. But just in terms of the coordinators, I'll give Nate Kanter a little love here today. And that's in part because Troy Apke, as we know, was released the other day. And there's always been this discussion of, like, why is Troy Apke still on this roster? Well, it's because he plays special teams and he does it at a pretty good clip, according to the guy who's running the show. They decided, though, that he said the decision wasn't his, that it was, you know, Rivera's or the personnel department, and, you know, it is what it is. But the question then is, well, who's replacing Apke as one of the gunners? Cam Sims is one. What else? And he mentioned that it's certain guys who have certain roles, namely fast guys who don't start or are not in the main high rotation spots. And he specifically mentioned Percy Butler and Christian Holmes. And, you know, Percy Butler was a big-time special teams player in college. He right now looks like he's behind Derek Forrest as sort of that Buffalo nickel. So that could be where Percy Butler sort of breaks into the league first. And then you have, he also mentioned Christian Holmes, who's sort of in that battle for one of the last cornerback spots. So I think that's a couple things to keep an eye on in particular. But if Butler, if they can get something out of Butler there, I know a fourth round pick for special teams. They did that in 2018, and that guy just got cut, having flamed out on defense. We're not there with Percy Butler, but I'm just saying that, you know, the fourth round pick for special teams isn't ideal. But if that's where he has to start, so be it. He was a really good special teamser in college. So I'll give, you know, that's my special teams talk for camp.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm interested if they're going to keep a sixth corner, and if they do, are they going to keep 11 defensive backs? What is the math? I know you only had 10 in your projection, but
I had 11 defensive backs.
No, you had 5 safeties.
You're right. I had 10. Correct.
5 + 5 = 10.
Look, it's been a long week. Yeah, I mean, and those things are always fluid, and that's the thing. Like, special teams is, you know, like, if that's the variable, like, that's the thing. If we were counting Apke as a defensive back, I mean, you have to put him somewhere. There's no special teams alone category except for the kicker, punter, snapper. Maybe we should almost do that, right? Like, if an Apke gets stuck, we just put him with the specialists because he's not really playing defense. All right. Well, look, so, Would you want to make a prediction on the game? No, I'm just kidding. By the way, so I should have said this earlier. It sounds like the Chiefs intend to play their offensive starters the first half, or at least, you know, until a point that Andy Reid is satisfied. So obviously, if you're facing Patrick Mahomes for any length of time, that will be quite the challenge. We'll see what they can do. I think Washington secondary has been solid. Certainly, they've been, you know, arguably the best unit in camp, but, you know, we also saw what happened on third down last week, and Patrick Mahomes is a different deal. So
I am going to give you a random prediction for this game.
Sure.
So I looked it up, right? Last year, Ryan Fitzpatrick, 14 snaps in the opener against New England, 23 snaps the following week in the preseason against Cincinnati. By that logic, I'm going to inverse it. Wentz, 22 snaps against Carolina, which means he'll play 13 snaps this weekend and only a drive or two. There you have it.
There you go. Well, Ron Rivera won't be happy if that's accurate, but he may not have a choice if the offensive line is where it's at. So we will see about that. All right, go read Matt at the Washington Times. He's at Matthew_Paris on Twitter. I'm at Ben Standing, and of course, you can go check out my work on The Athletic. I'll have a sort of a longer version of what we just did here on the site in the morning. But that is it for now. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Until next time.
Football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.